You are listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
Hour two of Miller and Moulton along the network. Thrilled to be joined once again by Mark Melusis. He does the TV radio thing in New York. TV, Pix 11, radio, WFAN. You can follow Mark on Twitter/X at Mark with a C, Mark Melusis, M-A-L-U-S-I-S. Mark, it's David and Mark. Thanks for your time. Good morning. How are you?
David, Mark, what's going on, guys? Good morning.
Well, what's going on in your neck of the woods where seemingly all hell is broken loose this week? Let's start with the Yankees. Are they lying? Are they fibbing? Are they concealing about Gerrit Cole? What do we know?
First off, teams become, especially certain teams, become, less and less forthright with information regarding injuries. And the Yankees have had issues diagnosing injuries in the past. And anytime you look at it, this is terrible news for Cole. So out 1 to 2 months, seeing a specialist, they're saying that the MRI was clean. I mean, I have no idea exactly where it is. I do know this. I mean, this is a massive blow to the Yankees. They were a starter short. If you're thinking about this team being a championship team before this, that's why they still had engaged conversations with Blake Snell. They offered him $150 million before they signed Marcus Stroman. It's not like a championship rotation when you look at it. With Cole healthy, backed up by Carlos Rodon afterward, who was a disaster last year. Stroman, who's been combustible in his career, and we've seen him here in New York with the Mets. And then you've got Nestor Cortez, who's had one good year in Major League Baseball, and then the upside for the inexperience of Clark Schmidt. Doesn't really exactly scream championship. Now the Yankees had hoped, and I really thought that the lineup could make up for some of the deficiencies, also depth of the bullpen, especially if Clay Holmes has a big-time year closing games out. This is, you have him out until May, potentially June right now. Those are the reports. That's a massive blow. I think the lineup is going to score a ton of runs this year, but if the Yankees are to win a World Series for the first time since 2009, if Cole is, say for argument's sake, he's done for the year, the Yankees are going to need two big-time starting pitchers. That is something that is going to be very, very difficult, if not impossible, to acquire at this stage of the year.
Do you think that this forces them to go sign Snell?
Yeah, I do. But I think they're going to give him $270 million over 9 years? No, I don't. I don't think the Yankees are in the business of doing that or handing out that kind of contract. I think the Yankees had hoped that with the timeline and the calendar that Snell maybe would have blinked and taken a short-term deal and punted, say, the next offseason. Well, we have a big-time year. I just came off a Cy Young with the San Diego Padres. I'll sign a short-term deal and hit free agency next offseason again, and maybe I'll get the longer contract that I'm looking for. Now, everybody and their mother knows, blood in the water. The Yankees, this is a significant blow to their rotation. A team that, in all likelihood, probably is just going to have Juan Soto for 1 year. They're looking to try and win the championship. So, obviously, agents and everybody else are going to feed off of that when they make calls for trades or when they're trying to sign out any guys that are still available on the open market.
Before we move on to the football teams, what do you think about overpaying both Snell and Montgomery for 1 year? I know Montgomery didn't pitch well in New York, but he seems to be a different pitcher since then. And what do you think they offer them both 1 year in excess of $30 million? Because Montgomery's reportedly being offered in the mid-20s. So the Yankees say offer him 30 for 1 year and then offer Snell 33 for 1 year, where he's probably getting a long-term deal offer in the 26, 27 range. Do you think there's any chance that the Yankees decide, listen, if we only got Juan Soto for 1 year, well, let's go all in for this 1 year?
Yeah, I don't think it's a terrible idea. Do I think I could see them doing it on one? I would have a hard time envisioning them doing it on both. I like Montgomery here. I thought the trade when they made that trade with the St. Louis Cardinals and trade a left-handed starting pitcher for Harrison Bader made little to no sense. I don't care what his analytics or metrics were away from home when he was a member of the Cardinals. He was an off-injured outfielder, and he was barely healthy. In, you know, a year and a half, he played 111 games during the course of the regular season. You know, I grew up a Yankee fan. You know, my Uncle Pete and my dad used to tell me, what do you need? You need lefty power. This was the old Yankee Stadium. You need lefty power, and you need at least one dominant lefty starting pitcher. Now, I understand Jordan Montgomery isn't, you know, Andy Pettit, but the Yankees department clearly did not have a grasp of his talent. As you saw him last year, you know, helped the Texas Rangers win. You know, they thought that he would never crack their top four in the postseason as far as being a starter. So they were dead off on that. I think the guy they'd be most interested in overpaying for a year, given the Cole injury news, would probably be more Blake Snell than Jordan Montgomery, even though I have a healthy respect for both of them, obviously.
All right, Mark, let's switch gears and talk a little football or politics, whichever one comes up first, because Aaron Rodgers now circulated as RFK Jr.'s running mate, possible running mate. Just what type of a people did that cause in New York City yesterday? Because it obviously nationally was a big story. I got to think the Jets fans are freaking out.
Yeah, well, now we know what the Green Bay Packers are going through. Now we understand why the Green Bay Packers in this relationship were like, yeah, we're ready for a divorce. We're ready to move on. We're ready to see exactly, you know, we have no idea what Jordan Love is. We're ready to exactly see what Jordan Love is all about, because we just can't take the nonsense that comes along with it. Listen, I think this is a publicity stunt. You know, I mean, you know, and I don't get really much into politics, but, I mean, this is really where we're at here. We're sitting here in mid-March. You got St. Patrick's Day coming up this weekend. We're talking about Aaron Rodgers potentially being the vice presidential running mate for RFK Jr. in this upcoming presidential election. I mean, it's comical. This is coming off the idea, you know, number one, that, you know, after the season, Rodgers was talking about the fact that the Jets need to be more focused on winning and back to football, and that's got to be the primary focus, and then you're hit with this. So there's no doubting the talent that comes along with Aaron Rodgers. Even at 40, even coming off Achilles, soon to be 41, there's no doubting that he's one of the greatest quarterbacks and most physically gifted quarterbacks that I've ever seen play the position. But with all of that, there's also no doubt there's a lot of nonsense that comes along with Aaron Rodgers. And this story is nonsense. Listen, he's not going to be, you know, even if he gets all, I have a hard time envisioning him doing it. You know, RFK Jr. is looking to grab some headlines. It's great that he's got him on the list. I mean, what are we doing here as a nation if Aaron Rodgers is really a vice presidential candidate, number one? Number two is he's brought here to play quarterback for the Jets. I think this story has been interesting for the last 48 to 72 hours. Outside of that, I think the Jets are getting back to trying to build an offensive line and trying to win some football games, because for Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh, their jobs are on the line in 2024.
Mark Melusis, PIX11, is where he does TV. He does radio on WFAN. You can follow Mark on Twitter/X, Mark with a C, Mark Melusis, MALUSIS. Well, let me ask you, I don't think the Jets have done nearly enough on the offensive line. They made one trade to upgrade. They lose a double-digit sack pass rusher. I don't know that the Jets are any better today than they were when the week started. And I don't know how, if you're a Jets fan, Mark, you can understand what Joe Douglas is doing.
Yeah, I think it's fair. Listen, they had Morgan Moses before, and they let him go. Now they make a trade for him for the Baltimore Ravens. Simpson, the guard. Got to understand, like, they were so bad along the offensive line last year. I mean, and I think they got two good pieces. If Barrett Tucker stays healthy, I think Joe Tippmann last year showed you that he's going to be an anchor at center, their second-round pick out of Wisconsin last NFL draft. I think he's going to be really good. They still don't have a left tackle. You can't talk about a good offensive line if you don't have a left tackle. So the Jets wake up this morning and they don't have a left tackle. And you look at the history of Joe Douglas, you know, they drafted Mekhi Becton to be the left tackle. I don't know if there's a guy that's sitting there with 10, if there's going to be a plug-and-play, no doubt about it. You're my starter at left tackle day one. Here, go protect the future Hall of Fame where we're trying to win a Super Bowl. I mean, that's the pressure that's going to be on that guy. Are there still guys available in free agency? For sure. Do the Jets have a lot of money? No doubt. No, they do not. So that's the issue. It's not like they went into this like Washington did with over $87 million of cap space for their new general manager. So, you know, the Jets are in a precarious spot. It's, you know, people get caught up in, well, they need a wide receiver too, or they need this. No, they need offensive line, offensive line, offensive line. If you can't protect it, you can't run it. You mentioned about Bryce Huff. Yeah, it's embarrassing for Joe Douglas. Bryce Huff was an undrafted guy that came here and he developed and he left for the Philadelphia Eagles for a $51.1 million deal. Now, listen, happy for Bryce Huff. Worked his rear end off, developed, proved all the naysayers wrong. The guy coming out of college was undrafted. But those are the guys that you want to keep in building. Now, you want to say, well, the Jets drafted Will McDonald last year in the first round. That's true, they did. Can he step in and be that guy? Well, I'll be honest with you, the impressions rookie year of Will McDonald is that he is a long way away from being a player that Bryce Huff was last year. They've added some secondary pieces, tertiary pieces along that defensive line, taking one-year gambles like on Kinlaw, who was a former first-round pick from the San Francisco 49ers. That's all well and good. I don't have no doubt that the defense is going to be legit next year, but Huff is a huge loss given the fact that he was a double-digit sack guy. I think he had 68 quarterback pressures, and that's a huge addition for the Philadelphia Eagles because he's great in the locker room and he's unbelievable on the field.
Mark, you know we're fans from afar, and can't believe that you would agree to come on at this hour. I really appreciate it.
I got to be honest with you. I want to hear a little. I'm up early. My son's skating right now. He's at a skating clinic up here in Darien, Connecticut. So I was like, the earlier the better. I was up at 6 o'clock this morning driving up to Darien. So
all right.
I'm happy to join you guys and have a good rest of the show.
All right. Safe travels, Mark. Mark Melusis, PIX 11 in New York, television, radio on WFAN. Hardworking guy, been in the market a while, keeps building himself up, up, up. Mark Melusis. Mark with a C, Melusis, M-A-L-U-S-I-S on Twix.
Well, he painted a rosy picture of the Jets and the Yankees, didn't he?
Yeah. We didn't even get, I thought we'd stop the damage and not even get to the Giants. I actually think the Giants have had the best week of the three. And they lost Saquon to a rival. So, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? I mean, that's how I think it's gone in New York City this week, sports-wise.
It is something. And, you know, I'm with Mark. I'm glad we didn't spend a whole lot of time talking about the Aaron Rodgers thing yesterday. I think it's laughable. People are like, well, could you imagine him debating? They're not getting on it. If he was picked, he's not getting on a debate stage. It's if we have a debate. Sorry. I'm done.
I think the threshold's 15%.
Which they'll never get to.
No, I don't believe he will either. Miller and Moulton. Trent Baalle and the play of the day next.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
21 minutes past the hour. Steve Kearney to talk a little Rays, who are going through some pitching injuries as well. Major League Baseball season for 28 teams gets underway 2 weeks from today. Dodgers and Padres are going to play a two-game series in Korea beginning a week from tomorrow. So we'll talk a little more baseball over the next couple of weeks. Steve Kearney to join us. We'll focus on the Rays in a bit. So today's National Potato Chip Day. That got us fired up. We've been yelling at each other during the commercial breaks all show, mostly about potato chips. And then we've deviated off course, and we think we've stumbled upon the topic. Are we there?
Oh, we're there.
Okay. So what's the final product? Poll question of the day, with the inspiration being today is National Potato Chip Day.
It's an all-timer. And I don't think people like it, because I can tell by early voting there's not a lot of votes on this sucker. So we may have to retool for the 8 o'clock hour as far as the poll question goes.
Did we overthink it? Did we get too cute?
We got too cute.
Nah.
Well,
see,
what about, come on, which New York team had the best week? I mean, David threw that out.
Nobody cares. Okay, nobody cares. Okay, it's potato chips. There's mass appeal here. How did we screw up such a mass appeal topic as a potato chip?
In honor of National Potato Chip Day, which current NFL starting quarterback would be the Pringles of the NFL?
See, that's funny, ladies and gentlemen. Come on, that's funny. That's sophisticated.
We give you Kirk Cousins, we give you Tua, we give you Dak, and we give you Brock Purdy.
Because let's face it, most of you would not choose that guy, to be the guy. Most of you do not think any of those four guys are going to win championships. You just think that they're, well, this is the best I can get my hands on. That's a Pringles.
But this is the kicker. That's the Pringles to David. I think there are people, there's a Pringles cult out there that love Pringles. And to them, this question makes no sense because they're like, Mahomes is the Pringles of the NFL quarterbacks.
Honestly, No one
thinks the Pringles is the favorite potato chip.
You don't think there's no one out there who likes Pringles more than Lay's.
Packaging's convenient. You could take it with you if you've got kids. Okay, the mini Pringles, here you go. Okay, yeah, I can give them some crap, but I only give them a little bit of it. Okay, here you go.
And to David's point, and to a texter said it earlier, you know, I've got a kid in the car who we're on the go between softball and soccer and gymnastics and eating in the car. You want a snack? Grab a thing of Pringles. You know what you're not going to do? Make a mess in my car with them.
When McDonald's got rid of the snack wrap, I cried for days, honestly. My daughter was raised on it. I'm like, wait, what are you doing? This is like two meals a day. It's like 12 meals a week. What's going on? They're quick. They're easy. They were $1.59. You get two of them. Bada bing, bada boom.
I'm sorry. McDonald's had a snack wrap?
They did. They did. They had a chicken snack wrap, a little fajita thing, a solid piece of chicken, and then just some lettuce, a little cheese, and some fake sauce. $1.59. It was tremendous. Okay. I'd pull in, order five, three for me, two for her. I'd give her bag in the back. Let's go. Boom. You know, you got 18 minutes in between, like you said, one practice and another. We're going from soccer to gymnastics. Boom, snack wrap. It was amazing. Couldn't believe I thought we were keeping the product alive just ourselves.
And don't forget to tip the McDonald's. I never do. That's a callback to our old conversation about David's mom.
Yeah, I know. She does. And she talks with them for like a long time. I'm like,
because that's what they want at the fast food places, for someone to take up their time and talk to them.
Although I have to admit, they know her by name now. You know.
Well, what choice do they have?
I mean, they may know her as Crazy Lady, but you know, they know her. Yeah, and that's what I keep saying to my mom. Mom, we're in the drive-thru. Drive-through, not drive-stop. Right. Stop and talk. That's my mom. Let's face it. Come on. That's your mom, too. You get to a certain age, everything's become drive, stop, and talk. It has. It's no longer a drive-through. It's drive, stop, and talk.
Well, I worry about anybody at that age going through a drive-through.
Well, there's a lot of people.
Things they can bang into.
McDonald's.
I'd rather they park and walk in.
It gets a little narrow, especially when they do the double lane. And it gets a little confusing, and you got to weasel your way.
All right. So I got to forward this. So this is our poll question.
It's up.
In honor of National
yes.
Potato Chip Day, which quarterback is the Pringles of the NFL?
And we may have missed out. You know, this is where I was worried. We went through this. We put Cousins. We put Tua. We put Dak. We put Brock Purdy. And I knew it would happen. It always does, that people chime in watching the show on Twitch or Facebook or YouTube, and Brian – says, you know, Russell Wilson is the Pringles of the NFL, fake and cheesy.
Ooh. I have to admit that somebody nominated Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, something about pretty and well-packaged, you know, boring, though, you know, something like that.
So that's our poll question. That Mark Miller, the David Moulton, Miller_Moulton on X.
All right, I guess we'll vote.
And we'll also get to Trent in the Molly Maid play of the day. Trent, what do you have for us today?
There were 43 games in men's college hoops yesterday, 43 at the D1 level. The best finish came early this morning, actually, a little over 5 hours ago. Abilene Christian versus Stephen F. Austin. The six final 9 seconds were about as rich as it was.
Up ahead, Simmons blocked at the rim. What a play by Christmas. 1 second to go. Kajuse for the win. Oh, it's good. Lumberjacks win.
Christmas came early for the Lumberjacks, or late, depending on how you look at it. It actually wasn't Christmas with the block. It was Jahlil Bo-Byrne. Sends it to A.J. Kajust, who just rips it at the right wing for the win. By the way, Stephen F. Austin was a 2.5-point favorite. So that was a bad beat for a lot of people. They win by three, and they'll take on UT Arlington and another late one tonight in round two. They're dogs in that one, of course. But you got to love that. That was at 2 a.m. Eastern time.
Who was it? Stephen F. Austin and Abilene Christian?
And Stephen F. Austin beat, yes, Abilene Christian. I had to look that up.
Our buddy Grant Boone then suffering a heartbreaking defeat there. He was courtside for Abilene.
Right.
By the way, the WAC's an interesting tournament. The top two seeds, they advance to the semifinals. So Grand Canyon and someone else is through to the semis. And then the 3 and 4 seeds got first round byes. And then these, you know, there were two games last night. The two winners play, you know,
the 3 and 4.
3-4s tonight in the quarters, and then they advance to the semis. So if you're a top two seed in the WAC, you got to win two games.
I don't mind that for the little conference, because what they're trying to do smartly is ensure that their best team has the best opportunity to win the conference.
Yeah, the team that should go to the tournament gets to go.
Former FGCU AD Ken Cavanaugh was adamant about that with the A-Sun. That's why he wanted home games and he wanted reseeding, because he wanted to give the top two teams in the conference in the regular season the best chance, play as many home games as possible, and the best draw.
Helps at the gate for the home teams because they've had a good year, so people are into their seasons, and so that's a positive. And if you're these little conferences, you want to knock off a big boy, and you don't want to do it. You know, was it Wagner beat Merrimack? Merrimack was the one seed. Wagner was like the 6th or 7th seed in that conference. They have no legitimate shot to win their play-in game, let alone a game against a one.
But McNeese State, a winner last night. I'm telling you, we got some good 13s and 14s in this tournament. We really do. Colgate won last night. McNeese State won last night. All the teams that we've needed to win this week to have potential first-round upsets have really been winning. Miller and Moulton. Steve Carney. He will join us next.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
22 minutes before the hour. Thanks so much for being with us. Ron Syrak, we'll talk a little golf, TPC getting underway. Right around now, in the greater Jacksonville area, Steve Carney, well, he founded and he works for StPete9.com, StPete9.com. He also hosts the Under the Orange Roof podcast. Follow Steve on Twix at Steve Carney, C-A-R-N-E-Y. Steve, it's David and Mark again. Hope spring training is treating you well. How are you?
Yeah, spring training is treating me fantastically. And things are well. I hope things are going well with you as well.
All right. Miller and Moulton over the years have gotten a vibe from certain teams in spring training. The most famous one with the Rays was in 2008, when we all know they had never done anything before, and they had that brawl with the Yankees. And sure enough, that was when the Rays started winning, whether it was coincidence or not. Those that covered the Phillies in 93 came out of Clearwater and said, you know, there's something different about this team. I actually think they're going to be pretty good. And they went all the way to the World Series. Just curious, you traveled throughout the Florida in spring training. I know you spent a lot of time with the Rays, but is there a team in which you're like, you know, I got a good feeling this year?
Right now, because I haven't seen Baltimore this year, I can't. That's the one team I'm most curious about. But of all the teams that I have seen so far this year, Atlanta has been the team that I've gone, wow, that team is really got something going. And I say that about the Braves a lot, you know, over the last, you know, three years or so. That's the team that has really impressed me the most of all the teams that I've seen over spring training. And this year is no exception. The Braves are just so strong, and it's really impressive to see what they're doing day in and day out.
Who's been making the biggest impression so far with the Rays in spring training, Steve?
You know, for me, it's Jonathan Aranda. You know, this is a guy that has really got to be able to show something this year. He's come up the last couple of years, and he's been the first year he came up in 2022, he kind of looked like he was overmatched both at the plate and in the field. Last year, it seemed like the bat started to get behind him a little bit, which is good. But still, this is a guy that really has struggled to find a place for himself in the field. And I think that's one thing that I think that the coaching staff really wanted to see from him this year. He handled himself well at first base. And the bat has certainly come to life here in March, which is a good sign. You know, he's hitting, I think, 414 for the spring with an OPS of like 1,200, which is great. Would love to see that carry into April. And if that happens, I think Rays fans will be very, very happy.
Steve, how many question marks, legit at the start of the season, question marks are the Rays going to have? Because there's been a decent amount of turnover. You've got the injuries with the pitching staff from last year that carry over. They trade Glass now. Now Taj Bradley with, you know, an injury that's at least going to keep him out to start the season. I mean, is this Rays team going to start the year with more question marks than they've had in a while?
They are. And part of it is due to injury. I think Bradley's pec strain is going to be a piece that is going to really throw the starting pitching depth a curveball, pardon the pun. But, you know, are you going to go with a guy that's not on the 40-man roster to start in your starting rotation? This year it certainly looks like that is a possibility, whether it's Naoyuki Uesawa or Jake Wagstaff or Jacob Lopez, who knows. What ends up being going with the fifth starter role, because I think they also want to keep Shane Boz's innings down. So I don't think he starts the year in the rotation either. So I think that that's probably one of the biggest question marks. Of course, the question mark of who's going to start at shortstop because of the whole Wander Franco thing and Taylor Walls not being ready to start the year, and the bringing in Jose Caballero, and then signing Ahmed Rosario. I think that's a big question mark. Now with Johnny DeLuca breaking his hand in the Dominican Republic, I think probably your fourth outfielder position is in question. And who's going to be the utility infielder that you lean on this year? I think those are probably four question marks, whereas, you know, over the last 5 years, you know, we've come out of spring training maybe with one or two. You know, and this year we're probably going to have twice that.
And last year, obviously, the Rays got off to that tremendous start and were able to just maintain from that point forward. It sounds like this year getting off to a good start is going to be a lot more difficult for them. And, Steve, the way you're talking, you know, we always look at the Rays as a you know, top two or three team in the division. Do they enter this year as the fourth best team in the East?
I think there's a possibility they could be the fourth best team in the American League East this year. I think that, but I've said all along that any one of those four teams could be first. I think any one of those four teams that we talk about, the American League East, could be fourth. And I think all four of them are going to make the playoffs anyway. So it could be very, very interesting.
Steve Carney, stpete9.com, stpete9.com. Also, listen to the Under the Orange Roof podcast. We're talking spring training baseball, a lot of focus on the Rays. Follow Steve on Twix, at Steve Carney, C-A-R-N-E-Y. All right. You're probably going to laugh about this. You're going to say, I can't believe I go on these guys' show. They ask the dumbest questions. But 2 years ago, the Rays reportedly offered Freddie Freeman 6 years, $150 million. Before he signed with the Dodgers. Do you think that the Rays would, could, or should, at the last minute here, call Boris and say, hey, Jordan Montgomery, 4 for $100, let's go? I mean, because you know what we're talking here. I mean, a durable starting pitcher.
I certainly get where you're going with it. The Rays and Scott Boris have not had the best of conversations when it comes to free agency. And I think that kind of makes it tougher because I truly feel that Scott Boris does not want any of his clients in Tampa Bay. I think that if Scott Boris had his way, all of his clients would be in New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, or Washington because of Boris's great relationship with Mike Rizzo over the years. And I think that if Scott Boris had his way, there is no way that he would have any of his clients, and that includes Randy Arozarena, on the Tampa Bay Rays. So I don't see a situation where they could be calling for Blake Snell, Jordan Montgomery, J.D. Martinez, or the like. So I as much as I would like that, and I'm sure that there are certainly plenty of Rays fans out there, and I deal with them all the time on social media, that say, just give Blake Snell a 1 or a 2 year deal. Well, the problem is that Scott Boris is completely aware that if Jordan Montgomery or Blake Snell sign a 1 or a 2 year deal, the downside on it completely outweighs the upside because the first time that one of those two guys has an issue injury wise, that means they'll probably never get a big free agent contract ever again. Those two guys are holding out for as many years as possible because that's what's in their best interest.
We've already addressed the starting pitching, which means that the bullpen's going to get taxed, particularly in the first part of the year. Are they ready, and can they handle the innings that they're most likely going to have to throw the first couple months of the season?
I think that that's probably a great question. I would think they are, only because of the fact that you've got a couple of guys that are going to be in that bullpen that are at least going to be stretched out to work multiple innings. Right now, Tyler Alexander and Chris Davinsky are stretched out to work about two innings, and the plan is to stretch them each out to work about three. And if they can do that, I think that really cuts down on the number of arms that you have to use over the course of a five-day period. So if you're able to do that and keep one of those guys or both of those guys stretched to two or three innings, I think that is going to be a huge plus for this team, especially if you can get them to work two innings every other day or three innings every third or fourth day. I think that's big.
Well, Steve, safe travels. Make sure you get to Sarasota to see the Orioles, and hopefully we could talk again right around opening day.
I look forward to it, guys. Thanks again.
Steve Carney, it's stpete9.com. stpete9.com does a really good job covering the Rays, and then he does a podcast. Under the Orange Roof is the title of the podcast. You can follow Steve on Twix. It's Steve Carney, C-A-R-N-E-Y. So, a little baseball. 2 weeks before opening day for the masses. I mean, Dodgers, Padres doing their thing a week from tomorrow out of the country. But 2 weeks today will be opening day in the States, so to speak.
Yeah, but those other games in Korea are going to be on at like 3 in the morning, 5 in the morning. They're going to be fantastic.
Do you and your AM sports channel have exclusive rights to those Major League Baseball games in Korea?
We're negotiating.
What are you, Boris? You holding out for the very last minute? Do you do these deals? It's March 14th, and these guys aren't in camp yet.
How about Steve Carney? If Boris had his way, he would not have one player on the Rays roster. Huh? I don't think he's wrong.
No, they don't want to do long-term deals. They don't want to throw around big-time money if you're an agent. I mean, really? Are the Rays choice 1, 2, 24?
28, 29?
I mean, the Rays, Marlins, and A's are probably the last three choices, right?
I would think so.
I got to admit, I think if you get Jordan Montgomery, a durable guy, pitches deeper into games than Blake Snell, the Snell-Rays relationship got ruined in the World Series. It did. Blake Snell wants no part of coming back pitching for Kevin Cash in the Rays. None. But I'm telling you, 1 year Jordan Montgomery right now, $25 million. I have no idea what's going on out there. Multi-year offers, this, that, and the other thing. I don't think he's been offered $25 million a year by
I don't think
Red
he'd
Sox.
Accept it. I don't think Boris would let him sign a one-year deal, David. I really don't. I don't care what the money is.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, clearly, because I'm sure somebody's offered him 1 or 2 years, and they're holding out. And they're playing poker right now. Boris is playing poker with the other teams. But the Red Sox have lost starting pitching. They haven't signed either one of them. The Yankees now look as if they're going to lose some starting pitching. I will be shocked if the Yankees don't sign one of Boris's two pitchers, though. If Gerrit Cole's going to start the year on the DL, and Carlos Rodon, their number two starter, is thrown batting practice so far in spring training. Batting practice. Has no velocity on his fastball. Is getting pounded. There should be concern with the Yankees. Is the AL East not going to be as good? I mean,
well, you know, that lineup for the Yankees is going to score runs that, in the likes that I think we've never seen before. Stanton could hit 7 in this lineup.
He could. It's a huge year for him. He's lost a bunch of weight, and you know he knows he's got to stay healthy. He's got to produce.
He hasn't so far in spring training, but
Aaron Judge nursing an injury, missing a week. Same week that Gerrit Cole's elbow. That's why it's kind of gone a little under the radar.
I want that lineup to stay healthy because they're worth watching every damn night, David. They really are.
I know. You're excited. Juan Soto's going to have a
monster year.
He may hit 50. He may hit 50. In that ballpark, he may hit 50 home runs. Calvin Ridley signed a 4-year, $92 million deal with the Tennessee Titans. Of all the NFL free agency news from yesterday, that was probably the biggest. Joe Flacco is now with the Colts, which is interesting because Anthony Richardson, A, can he stay healthy? B, can he play? I mean, they're going to play him, but we don't know if he's any good. So, and I think that's why Flacco said, yeah, let me go there. I might end up playing there. And this is kind of a goober thing, but Trev Alberts left Nebraska for Texas A&M, a guy who's Mr. Nebraska. And he left, and he was a very well-paid AD at Nebraska. Top 3 in the Big Ten, top 10 in the country. And he left to go to Texas A&M. Kind of the headlines in the sports world from last night. Miller and Moulton. The Players is getting underway right now, in fact. Ron Syrak to talk a little golf on Miller and Moulton.